Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
As you heard in the headlines, negotiations continue today at a busy COP29, and in the middle of it, a new report was published by the Climate Action Tracker Project saying the planet is on course at the moment for a 2.7 degrees Celsius rise in temperature. Now, scientists say this would cause a level of disruption that would put human civilization at risk. Valerie Hickey is Global Director of the Environment Department at the World Bank and is at COP29, but is with me now from COP29. Valerie, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks so much, Cormac. Thanks for taking time to talk about climate change.
Well, it's my privilege to talk to you because there's an awful lot at stake there. And we heard George Lee say in the headlines in his report from Baku that there are tensions at COP29. And we'll get to those in just a second, Valerie. Can I ask, though, as Global Director for the Environment Department at the World Bank, what is your role there?
So I have to say I have one of the best roles I can have because I'm not a negotiator. The World Bank, as you know, is a membership-based organization. We're owned by countries, including our very own Ireland, and we're there to help countries figure out what they have to do. We get to avoid the politics. We get to talk about the practicalities. We get to talk about the energy transition. What does it look like? Where do we put money into it? We get to talk about nature-based solutions. How do we make sure that the 3 billion people who live within 1 kilometer of forests aren't left behind, that we make sure to protect the assets that provide them a social safety net? And we're here to talk about the money we're willing to put on the table. And we just released, Cormac, couple of days ago with our sister multilateral development banks, a commitment that starting in 2026, all of us together are going to put $120 billion a year for climate finance on the table. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud to say that the World Bank Group is going to do a little bit more than half of that at $65 billion a year.
Okay. And it's a really significant amount of money, $60 billion or $120 billion. But when you look at the fund that every country there is trying to put together, $1 trillion, in a way, it's a gargantuan task. Do you and the World Bank then have, you're not in the negotiations, you say, do you have a role, Valerie, in trying to convince the delegations from the wealthier countries to put the money on the table to make up that $1 trillion?
So I think part of our role is to do some of the economic analysis to show why putting money on the table to support the Global South is an investment. It's not just a cost. It's not something to do because it's a nice to have, but that it's going to help everybody. The other thing I think we try and do is show that in many ways, this is something that can't just be funded by the Global North, that in fact, the majority of this $1 trillion is going to have to come from domestic public budgets, including in countries in the Global South. It's why we spend a lot of time talking about perverse subsidies. Mm. $1.5 trillion a year, Cormac, that is spent directly on supporting perverse outcomes for energy, agriculture and forestry. And if we just shifted that money, gave it to the same farmers, the same fishermen, but to do better things, that's going to be part of that $1 trillion that's going to help countries adapt to climate change.
Okay, Valerie, I'm going to appoint myself the Minister for Finance or Public Expenditure for Ireland now, right? And I'm going to say, of course, we want to help in terms of climate action, but we have crises in housing and in health. We have transport to sort out and education as well. We don't have billions of domestic money to put on the table to help the Global South or the fight against climate change. What's the argument against me?
So I have to tell you, Minister, and it's always a pleasure to chat to you, that you know as well as I do that you can't separate all of these issues. Look at what's happening in terms of migration flows. We've studied some of the numbers just in terms of how many people are going to move internally because of climate change, and it's huge. And we're not just talking about climate change affecting poor countries. We're talking about climate change affecting poor communities in every country. Look at what's happening in Valencia, in Spain. And so what this means, Minister, mm-hmm. is that we really need to figure out how to invest in the Global South, how to put money to help them adapt so they can stay where they are, live lives of dignity, and become buyers for our products. Ireland is such an important country in terms of making sure we can grow our market share in the export market. We can do that better with more customers who are happier at home. And of course, the conversation about climate change isn't just about adaptation, it's about mitigation. Mm. We need to bend that curve of carbon emissions to zero. And that's another investment because it'll make us more competitive ourselves.
Very convincing argument, without doubt. Can I pick you up on one word you're using there repeatedly? Investment. You put this money on the table from the Global North as an investment in all of our health and well-being and the economies and so on and the fight against climate change. But we're hearing from COP29, Valerie, that there needs to be a grant, not a loan from now on. Is that the case?
No, not at all. I think countries are very aware of the fact that what they need is blended finance. They need a mix. There are going to be some things that the poorest countries in the world don't want to borrow for, particularly in the midst of an enormous debt crisis, in addition to a cost of living crisis. Things like technical assistance, things like thinking through some of the analysis. They'll want some grant money so that they can make investment projects shovel ready. But then they're willing to borrow. They already are borrowing. We're seeing countries put their money where their mouth is themselves, and they're already borrowing for climate change. So it's not all about grant financing. It really is that blended finance, the mix of both, that is going to make the difference.
Sometimes when you talk about high finance like this and the economies of the world and so on, you can lose the message, can't you? You can lose the idea behind all of this and who's impacted. And I was watching earlier your chat, I think it was yesterday, Valerie, your chat with Grace Malley, who's a young attendee at COP29 from Tuvalu. She's a member of the Rising Nations Initiative. Mm-hmm. Would you mind telling people about that chat and the impact it had on you?
No, I mean, you're absolutely right, Cormac. We forget about the families, the poor communities, the small companies that are losing business, that are losing their lives because of this. And Grace Malley's from Tuvalu. For those of us who don't know, Tuvalu is another lie in a large island ocean nation state, just like ourselves, just much smaller in terms of land mass, bit bigger in terms of ocean space. And they have fewer than 12,000 people, and they're in danger of their island disappearing. At high tide, they're already being inundated with floods such that they're stuck. They can't move around. This is already a poor country, and every time there's a king tide, not to mind when there's a cyclone come through, not to mind when there's a hurricane come through, the assets of those people, their homes, their cars, they're being washed away. And so this, for someone like Grace, as a young woman who's thinking through, can she stay in her home? I mean, it's existential. If we don't figure out this climate crisis, if we don't keep, as they say in the COP lingo, 1.5 alive, if we don't slow emissions such that we don't get worse than we are today, that's the only hope there is, not just for Tuvalu, but for so many of the small islands and for so many coastal communities. Or people living in high mountain states like the Kyrgyz Republic, for example, where there was 360 natural disasters just in the first 8 months of this year alone, because of climate change. And so really there is just people who are losing their lives, they're losing their jobs, they're losing all of their assets, you know, and for so many of the poor people we deal with at the World Bank, they have put blood, sweat and tears into trying to build up those assets, into having a small amount of savings, be able to put their children into school, put food on the table. Climate change is wiping that out. That's not okay. We can do better.
Yeah, it's really frightening, all right, when you have whole communities, whole countries, and then languages and all they represent vanishing, really. And everyone is affected, as you say. You mentioned Valencia, but we have floods regularly here in Middleton or Cork City or wherever the case may be. And since we mentioned Cork, Valerie, let me tell our listeners, this is not a message from the World Bank, from someone from afar, from on high. This is one of our own, Valerie Hickey, telling us it's a fair old journey you've been on from Bunskill, Hrís Rí and Turner's Cross to rubbing shoulders with the great and the good of the world, Valerie.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, last week when I was sitting with King Charles over in London, we were talking about plastic pollution because, of course, plastic is climate change in its physical form and we're trying to figure out how to deal with that. It was far from where I was brought up, I can tell you that. It's far from the People's Republic of Cork, but no better place to raise up and try and fight for these good causes.
Did you tell King Charles how much of a privilege it was for him to be with a Cork woman?
Absolutely, I did. Sure, didn't he know it well?
Yeah, I'm sure he did. But can I ask you this, though, in all seriousness, there is a serious climate message that you're telling us here as well. And I mentioned at the very start that we're on course, according to the Climate Action Tracker Project, for a 2.7 degrees. You mentioned 1.5, a 2.7 degrees Celsius rise in temperature globally. My God, is all I can say. I mean, can you transmit to me what your feeling is if, based on all you know, and I've read some of your papers on the World Bank website, what's your feeling when you hear of a 2.7 degree rise in temperature?
I mean, the world will be in chaos, because it's not just about the fact that there'll be small islands or coastal communities that are unlivable. It'll be the fact that we're going to see financial collapse. We did a study with the Central Bank of Malaysia, and over 54% of their commercial loan portfolio is dependent on the ecosystem services that climate is destroying. So think about, over half of their companies won't be able to pay back their loans if climate change gets to that 2.7 degrees. I mean, we're going to see financial collapse. We're going to see conflict. We're already seeing conflict today, where we're seeing communities in countries like Mali who are fighting over what's left of land that's actually useful for growing food or raising cattle. We've already got 49 million people on the brink of starvation today. That number will pale in comparison to what's going to happen if we don't bend that curve of emissions to zero. And if at the same time we don't help countries adapt today and build their own resilience, because we are at 1.5 degrees today. If we can stop it where we are today, we're still going to have climate disaster, but we can help countries build resilience against that. It's going to be very hard to do that if we go up to 2.7 degrees.
Okay. And it's worth keeping that tone of hope as well, I suppose, because it is possible at this point, even though it's getting a lot more difficult. Well, thank you very much indeed. I must say it's both my privilege and King Charles' privilege to be in your company. Valerie Hickey, thank you so much for talking to us. That's Global Director of the Environment Department with the World Bank, joining us from Baku at the COP29 conference. Valerie, Mila Buchas, thank you.